Friends with Brews?
Episode 17, take 2.
Friends with Brews?
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Scott.
I have 3 brews today. I was trying to tell you when things weren't working, and I thought they were working, but they weren't working, that I have a get drunk quick kit today. I brought a backpack full of ice with my brews in it, following from the example of Peter Nicolaitis, who is always well prepared.
The Peter school of get drunk quick.
Right, but then I had a technical problem, and now my cup is pretty much not icy anymore.
Well, I have a technical problem in that I can't get my stupid boom mic to show up in a way that does not either obscure my camera or my monitor. I'm just,
there's no way to do it, so don't even worry about
it. But I...
Since we had a problem, I'm going to deviate from the way we did it before, and I'm going to introduce my first beer first. And that is, if you remember from before, or if you use the search engine on our site now...
Are you drunk already? Did you say the search engine?
Friendswithbrews.com. No, I didn't. Are you
Friends
making fun of the way
Bruges?
I talk?
No, you sounded like you were slurring your speech.
I was not. I'm talking
I'm
like
glad that we've
do.
Recorded it. We've recorded it so we can have proof.
If you search the engine, you'll see that last year I had a Rogue Santa's Private Reserve and I didn't care for it. Apparently, they have a different Rogue Santa's Private Reserve this year. It's called Honey Mamas, and I'm going to drink it now. Here's what it looks like, if you can see that.
Honey Mamas. Okay.
Yeah, and it says, what does it say? Oh my God, I can't read because it's dark in here. Hold on. I have a light. It says, tahini, tangerine, and chocolate flavored stout. Boy, they've got like 5 paragraphs of writing to get to what this beer actually is. It's like they wrote a story on here.
That's impressive.
So anyway, I'll see if this was better than last year's Rogue Santa Reserve. So now tell me about your beer again, which you already told me about, and I apologize immensely.
I am having a Hoegaarden Witbier. So it's a summery beer, a wheat beer, right? And boy, when I pop the cap and I sniff this, it smells so yeasty and wheaty. It's great. And yes? What?
The German pronunciation of Hoegaarden is better than it would be if you were like a southerner. I got my beer down at the Hoegaarden.
Okay, I got it down at the Hoegaarden. Is that better?
Yep.
Okay, fine. Hoegaarden. Anyway, so it's a cloudy, weedy, light beer. I'm going to take a nice sip of it now.
Honestly, that looks like you were working out and you didn't want to actually go to the bathroom so that you used whatever container was available.
I'm so glad that I have you muted right now and I can't hear what you're saying because I have a feeling that it's gross or derogatory. I don't know how I would know that, though. Anyway. Yeah, this is great.
All right, let me taste mine. This is not bad. This is much better than last year's. I don't know how I feel about it yet, but it is very much better than that thing I had last year, which had wood chips in it or whatever it was. Not actual wood chips, but you know what I mean. It's still... Yeah, Rogue is one of those frenemies of mine. They definitely...
Okay.
There's something about those guys. There's a couple good ones, and then the rest are marginal, and then there's some that are really bad. This one I would call somewhat marginal. I don't think I would buy this again on purpose, but I don't mind it. It's pretty okay.
So don't tell my neighbor, because she bought this for me as a gift for house-sitting for her this summer.
I won't tell her, but this podcast might.
Right, but I know she's not going to listen, so that's okay. This is not my favorite wheat beer. I like wheat beers a lot. This one is not very flavorful, though. Doesn't have a lot going on.
Can I make a comment? If you weren't constantly bad-mouthing people, we could have a lot more listeners because you wouldn't be afraid to say, hey, listen to my podcast. But don't listen to that part where I totally say bad things about you.
I didn't bad-mouth her. I just said I didn't really like the beer that much. She gave me a lot of other nice beers. It's just this one, 1 out of 6.
I think the exact words you used were, what a shit present. No.
If you make me spew shit present beer all over my MacBook M2, I will not forgive you.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. That is awesome. What a shit present. Thanks.
Okay, so the other brew I have today.
I'm just
going to
keep swearing so that you have to keep bleeping it
That's
out.
Fine. The other brew that I have today is I have a Back Porch Coffee Roasters single track. And this is, as you might imagine, a coffee, my friend Peter, from Back Porch Coffee Roasters, and this coffee is an Antigua Guatemala coffee under the name of Hunapu, I don't know what that means. It says Hunapu is a blend of small producer farms from around Antigua. Anyway, they claim that this coffee has notes of dried fig, cacao nibs, and molasses. And I will say that this is a very smooth coffee. Like, I can, for a 24-ounce cup, I can use 20 grams of this stuff and it not be too strong or bitter at all. It's very good.
Okay. For what size cup?
24 ounce.
24? Okay.
And I can put a whole 20 grams of this coffee in there. And now, these Back Porch Roasters are located somewhere in Oregon, but I have to find out where. Oh, Bend, Oregon. Okay. So they're in Hipster Bend.
Okay. Well, to round out my beer, my Hoegaarden, it's from Belgium. It's a Belgian wheat beer. It's apparently this brewery's been around for like, I don't know, well, the village has been around for around 600 years anyway. So that's you know, they've got some staying power.
The beer's been around for 599 years.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's about 4.9% alcohol. And again, it's a weedy, light, I would say it like a summer beer. It probably would taste good with like a little lemon twist or an orange. That might help.
Did you say Wheaties?
It's good. I mean, it's a refreshing. Yeah, it's Wheaties. Just pour it on your Wheaties and everything's good. No, I like it. It's okay, but it's just a little weak. And, you know, when I think Belgian beers, I think like punch in the mouth strong. So this is not like that.
First of all, the beer might call you weak. And then secondly, why do you want to punch things in the mouth? My alcohol is 6.5% and 19 IBUs. What's 91 SRM? What's that? Is that a molasses
SRM?
Index? Yeah.
I have no idea.
I think that's a molasses index, right?
There's a molasses index?
No, I'm just kidding. But there's tahini, tangerine, and chocolate. So there's no molasses in here. The molasses are in my coffee, not my beer. Why do they have an SRM on this? What is SRM? Beer... SRM rating.
Beers with friends?
Friends with SRMs? Oh, beer colors. The SRM color guide for beer styles. Huh. Interesting. I've never had a... I don't remember having had a beer that cared about the... oh my God, don't do that.
I did not know that was a thing. I didn't know that there was a rating of beer colors.
Yeah, I didn't either. Okay. So I'm using, this isn't on our documents, but I just got reminded of it by the fact that I just used it because I accidentally maximized my Safari window.
Okay.
And I just put it back to the right half of the screen using Control Alt right arrow. Do you know why? Do you know how I can do that? Does that ring a bell with you?
Control
Alt.
Alt.
Right arrow. Yeah. Look, there's something in your menu bar upstairs that'll tell you how I did that.
Oh, you're using Rectangle.
I'm using Rectangle Pro. You're the one who turned me on to it. I was using Moom or something like that before, and I got to say, this is much better. I really like this.
Agreed. I also used Moom, and when the free trial expired, I was like, oh, okay, I got to buy this. And then mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? I'm just not getting it. It wasn't as intuitive for some reason. I was like, okay, I just have these little bars and little buttons there. And then I looked up, I said, there's got to be another way to do this, to automatically tile my windows or stick this in the top first third or something like that. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, there was. I found this open source thing called Rectangle, which does exactly that, pretty much direct competitor to Moom.
Yeah.
And it's free, except you paid for the pro version, and which is around the same price.
Right. It's not very expensive at all. It's well worth it. I can't remember what the differences between the pro and the free versions are, except that I think it lets me save layouts, for example. I can save the current layout, mm-hmm. which is really nice. In fact, I'm doing that right now because this is my podcasting layout. And I think it gives you a few other key choices in terms of... And oh, this is cool. Look here. So this layout that I just saved with all my podcasting app windows, I can record a keyboard shortcut for it. I can trigger it on display connected. I could trigger it on display disconnected. I could bring windows to the front. I can launch, close, minimize apps, only execute on frontmost app. It's very cool. Like you can just say, so like if for some reason this layout was one that I only wanted to use when I was connected to an external monitor, let's say if I had a laptop, for example, I could do that. It's pretty cool. It's flexible. It's a good app.
It's cool. Yeah, no, I like it. I'm enjoying Rectangle, and I do have it on my list to go ahead and subscribe, you know, pay for, like, the
pay
pro
for,
version.
Yeah. It's not subscribe. It's a
sorry.
One-time.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to do that. I'm sorry, it's not a subscription. So many softwares are these days. So,
I guess the consensus is my coffee I really enjoy. This is a coffee that I've had before. I will buy it again because I have bought it again.
Mm-hmm.
The Rogue Santa's Private Reserve for 2022, the Honey Mamas. It's good. I will finish the six-pack that I bought without trepidation or regret. I will enjoy it, but I won't buy it again.
Okay.
And then I have another beer for later if I get to that. We'll see.
Okay. I only grabbed one beer.
That's fine.
Because I am going out. I don't have a hard stop tonight, but I do have plans for afterwards, which may also involve a beer.
Right, yeah. So save yourself for that.
I'm saving myself for a beer. Sorry, babe. No, I can't tonight. I'm saving myself
for a beer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Put your clothes back on. So, I'm saving myself for a beer.
For a beer.
So, The other thing is, I have to be careful because one of the things that I've done, which also isn't on the list, and I apologize, but I'm eating fewer calories now. I think we talked about this before, but I'm basically eating fewer calories per day, and my net calories are the same, but what it lets me do is exercise a little bit less, but I feel less full throughout the day. I do have to be careful because depending on my work day, I can get to a point where I feel a little bit of a blood sugar drop.
Okay.
And that is the kind of thing that can happen to me. Yesterday, I wasn't working, and I still had quite a blood sugar drop before dinner. I could feel it. But in general, I would say that even though it's the same net calories, eating less calories and just exercising a little bit less, I actually feel a lot better. I think my body feels a lot better just going with less food in general.
Okay. Yeah, and there's definitely some theory and maybe science behind that about caloric restriction as a lifestyle and benefits thereof.
Yeah. And hopefully I'll get used to, because when I first started losing weight back in 2018, all the way through probably most of 2020, or at least through 2019 for sure, I had a pretty low total calorie intake. And then I slowly started upping it as my exercise went up. And so I got in the habit of eating a lot more, not a lot more, but a few hundred calories more food per day and then burning it off with exercise. And then I got trapped there because then my stomach wanted that much food all the time.
Yep. I know that feeling. You get that and you have to start ratcheting it down. I mean, after I've finished running my marathons, I was like, yep, yeah, okay, I still want to eat a whole pizza right now, and I really shouldn't. So
no more marathon pizzas, Peter.
Better slow down.
So, no more marathon pizzas and no more pizza marathons.
Exactly.
So, all right. So one thing we did want to talk about, I know the transition was a little weird and a little confusing because we recorded some episodes where we were basically wondering, should we transition to Friends with Brews? And then we just kind of did it. So we never really officially detailed exactly what happened or why. But I think if you listen to episode 15 on friendswithbrews.com, you'll see that basically we decided we were having coffee that day. And we were like, you know what? We want flexibility to have coffee or tea or whatever, not always have to have beer. And that will give us more times when it's appropriate for us to record. And or we just don't necessarily want to drink as much beer. So it's also, and then Clay pointed out something that I'll admit, selfishly, the bastard that I am, I didn't even consider, which is the fact that it's a more accessible podcast this way. It might interest more people because, yeah, okay, fine, there's probably a lot of people that like beer, but most of those people probably also like coffee. Some of them might like tea, but there's definitely people who might not like beer who do like coffee and tea. So I don't know if the mix of different drinks that we're going to drink is going to be enough to appeal to those other people now or not, but it sure can't hurt to be a little more general purpose in terms of the brews. And they are all proper brews. Brew is beard, Peter.
Brew is beard.
Coffee is beard. No, coffee is brewed and tea is brewed. So,
well, you see, I didn't think we were doing this for the benefits of the listener. I thought it was just that, you know, you're on the West Coast, I'm on the East Coast, and it's not always, so we say, compatible for us to be drinking beers at the same time when we record.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why you and I are apples, because that's why we did it and that's what we thought of. But Clay Daly, being a better person than us, also pointed out that it might be a benefit to the listeners.
Okay. I mean, if tens of people benefit from our decision to drink coffee as well as tea as well as beer, then fine. I'm down with that. I'll drink to that.
Wait, wasn't that an Apple slogan? Drink different.
Drink different.
Yeah, drink different. So yeah, anyway, so now we have the new site. But if you subscribed manually with the RSS feed or through Overcast, you're probably not hearing me right now. But if you subscribed in Apple Podcasts, you probably are hearing me right now. Anyway, friendswithbrews.com, and there's links on there how to subscribe. And then we also have search now, so you can basically search for any type of brew, anything in the episode show notes. And you can also filter by drink types, or you can filter for only see episode results or only see brew results, which would include beer, coffee, tea. It's pretty nice that way. And then, yeah, it's just a better podcast, I think. It'll make a better show because we can have the different kinds of drinks. We enjoy these different kinds of drinks, and we like to drink them while we talk to each other.
Variety.
Variety Jones. Wasn't he arrested with the dark web guy? Anyway.
I have...
Do you remember that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. You're talking about the fact that the world's richest man is an asshole.
Oh, no, I meant, do you know what I'm talking about with Variety Jones? Did you read the story of the Silk Road?
You mean reality winner?
No, Variety Jones. Variety Jones is the guy who helped coach that kid who set up...
Yes, I did not read the whole story of the Silk Road, but I have heard about it many times over the years in various podcast interviews and Wired articles and stuff.
Right, yeah. Okay, anyway, so slow week in social media. Is that what we're going with?
Yeah, nothing ever happened. Like, Twitter is just, there's nothing going on there. It's not exciting. It's not, there's no news about it.
No, not at all.
So, yeah. Wait, no, sorry. That was last year. This year, it's more exciting because Elon Musk has just bought Twitter. He just, like, walked in and bought it, fired 75% of the place, and now he's made it a better place, right? Twitter's good again? Everything's good? It's all fixed?
Right. So, Elon Musk is an interesting person. I have the feeling that he... Well, I don't know. At a very minimum, I believe that he's one of those people that thinks that... people should be allowed to say whatever they want, and then he can solve it through technology in terms of giving people the ability to filter out the stuff that they don't like. And that's at the very minimum. If you want to be more cynical, you could say that Elon Musk is just an asshole, and he agrees with some of the terrible things that people say. The point is, I don't know what's going to happen with Twitter. I've been reading a lot of weird articles. I don't really know what's going on. Supposedly a lot of people got laid off. Supposedly he wanted to look at the code himself. But then the guy who's in charge of some of the content moderation or whatever on Twitter has claimed that there are no changes, that they're still taking, you know, abuse and all that very seriously, that the influx of people saying bad things immediately afterwards to test it under Elon Musk, you know, thinking that, oh, good, he's going to open this up to us now. We can be bad again. He claims that that's not going to be tolerated. So I don't really know what's going on at Twitter. All I know is Elon Musk is at best a bit of a troll.
Yes.
He says things that are either bad or they are trollish remarks that he doesn't mean. And it's really hard to know how that's going to affect Twitter, because it's hard to know what he actually wants to do. Is that a fair?
Yeah, he's so consistently, you're gonna have to bleep everything I want to say. He's just a spoiled little child.
Yeah, he is.
And it is, you know, like, I can't believe I'm saying this now. I never would have said this like 20, even 10 or 20 years ago. It is not fair, you know, but then again, life is not fair. So, okay, that's fine. I get it. But my God, like, it's just, especially when you read the Atlantic article that you sent me about his texts and stuff, about how Ellison and Calacanis and, you know, the PayPal mafia are all just sitting there sucking up to him all the time.
Well, I didn't know, but Calacanis works for Twitter, apparently.
Does he? Was he sucking up just because he wanted to keep his job? I mean, geez. Oh, brother. It was just amazing, though. It's just amazing. I mean, I'm looking at Twitter now for the first time in I don't know how many months. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not missing anything. I'm really not. So I'm curious, are you going to change your behavior at all with respect to Twitter as a result of Musk buying it?
No, because I already, first of all, I'm not a, I guess maybe he doesn't work for Twitter. He's just raising funds for Twitter. Interesting.
Raising funds for it? What do you mean?
He's raising funds for Twitter. It says Elon's close friend and Jason Calacanis raising funds for Twitter. I don't know. Take over.
Oh, well, Elon. Oh, Calacanis not working for Twitter. Got it.
Right.
I was going to say, Musk owns it. He doesn't have to work for it.
No, I'm not going to change anything because I already am not a completionist. I already try to be careful about the people I follow, which doesn't mean that I only follow people who are like Apple nerds or whatever. I don't live in a bubble on there. I follow a lot of interesting people of diverse viewpoints, but I'm not a completionist. I probably don't see most of the things all the people I follow say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to change anything. In fact, I will go so far as to say that alternatives like the Fediverse, which includes Mastodon, bored the hell out of me until recently when, for example, there has been a big influx of InfoSec people pouring into Mastodon specifically, but the Fediverse, but a lot of them on mastodon.social. For some reason, that's the one everybody's going to. It's really weird. I saw someone today say, there's nothing confusing about Mastodon. You log in, you look at the, and it's like, no, you don't understand. There's instances, there's some instances can see other instances. Some can't. It is confusing. I'm sorry, mister, but, and the guy's a programmer. So it's like, programmers aren't the best judges of what is or is not confusing for the average person.
No, absolutely not. I mean, there's your own bias. Like you right. see things the way, you know, you see things through a programmer's lens.
Right. You see them through a tech lens, but you're also super good with computers. Like you can onboard the piece of information that Mastodon doesn't work the same as Twitter, and there's all these instances, and so, and they can kind of talk to each other. You can understand that in one sentence, whereas somebody who's less tech savvy is going to need a whole conversation about that.
Yep. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, try to explain Mastodon to your dad. Good luck with that.
I don't even try to explain email to my dad.
Your dad still goes to the holy computer and bows at the temple of the email.
My dad still has to go and get his email
get it.
Over in the den where it exactly, is. I'm like, yeah. Dad, you see this nice fancy computer I bought you that you have in your pocket here?
No, Peter, the email is in the den.
I know. And I open it up and I open up his email and I show him. I'm like, look, the same message right here that you just saw over there. It's right here on the phone.
No,
and he's like,
no.
Oh, yeah. And then he walks and goes and gets the email at his computer. Yep.
Anyway, I don't think I'm going to change that much, but I definitely will be monitoring it to see if Twitter changes. And I also will monitor it to see if it changes for other people. People that are more likely to immediately suffer the consequences of other people's increasing free speech, if you catch my drift. Because I'm probably less likely to notice an uptick in sexist or racist comments as fast as people who would directly be impacted or targeted by those statements. So, but if people that I trust and like are seeing those things, yeah, I'll take that into consideration as to what I want to do with Twitter. And I do have Mastodon accounts and do have a Fediverse account. And like I said, it hasn't been interesting until now. All of a sudden, I've seen a big influx of InfoSec people, and it makes me wonder what other kinds of people are going to start going in. So I was always of the opinion that the Fediverse / Mastodon would never take off, but I could be wrong. There could be an inflection thing going on here, or it might just be where it gets a little bit bigger but still doesn't take off with the average person. Like, I don't think I'm going to see any Formula One drivers on Mastodon anytime soon. I don't think I'm going to see Taylor Swift, the actual real Taylor Swift on Mastodon, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it'll be interesting. But the answer is no, in the short term, I don't think so. I've called Elon Musk an asshole on Twitter a couple times since the takeover. What about you, Peter? What's your thought process on this?
I have not publicly said anything to Elon Musk recently. I mean, I've sent him plenty of tweets about my Tesla.
Oh, I didn't say it to him. I just said it about him.
Yeah. But I am inclined to just go dark. I will probably keep the account. And I mean, I do not remember the last time I logged in and posted something to Twitter. I think
I probably posted
like my, well, not even that anymore. Now it's just, it pulls from a recipe. Like it subscribes to a blog or to a LinkedIn post or something like that, or podcast or something. I'm inclined to just let that die and just kill it and leave the account there, not cancel it, but just leave it active and maybe leave like one last, because I've even been using tweet delete to delete like everything after like 2 weeks or something like that. And I'm inclined to just leave it with like a single post to say, here's my blog, and go from there. So, you know, I don't like the guy. And I don't hold him in this reverence. You know, I used to think he was cool. And he's not. He's not cool.
No, but he is a religion.
Yeah. Well, there's that. Or a cult, if you will.
It seems like it's getting worse where people, in order for people to be enthused about something, they have to either be so gung-ho about it to, and I'm talking about people. It's one thing to be enthusiastic. Like, let's say you love specific video games. Good. Yay. Good for you. But to hold other people up to these cult of personalities, I think the trend towards people holding other people up as these, you know, one-dimensional heroes, like not so black and white.
Yep.
That seems to be increasing to me.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Polarization? Of course. You know, it's either you're either this or you're that.
There's no complexity. There's no nuance. There's no acceptance of the fact that, okay, I like some of the things this person does, but they are a complicated person. And, oh my God, they also did this horrible bad thing.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. There's no in between. They're either great or bad. You know, Elon is wonderful. We'll just completely overlook all of his bad qualities and yada, yada. So yeah, no.
Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. What I am hoping happens, first of all, I agree with you. I'm not going to get rid of my Twitter account either way unless things really go south. Unlike Facebook, which I happily gave up my account because Facebook is just a different beast. Facebook could only be used for, in my opinion, Facebook was always about people arguing with each other. Whereas Twitter, I can manage it in such a way that I get interesting stuff from interesting people without all the harassment or the weirdness.
I thought Facebook was about Zuckerberg trying to, you know, get laid.
It is, but for people using Facebook, it's just arguments all the time.
Got it.
I like the asymmetric nature of Twitter because you can follow people who don't know you, don't care about you, and you can just get interesting information from them. Whereas with Facebook, you have to be friends with people, and it's undoubtedly going to be people that are related to you or friends of theirs or something. And who wants those people's viewpoints? Let's be honest.
As opposed to friends with beer.
Right. So, I don't know. Anyway, the whole point is, yeah, I'll keep my Twitter account. I won't get rid of it. If things go really south or they just actively do things that are horrific, then I will certainly keep closing my Twitter account as an option. But for now, I'm just going to continue as is. I'm also going to check in on my Mastodon accounts regularly and see what goes on there. I want to follow a diverse group of people on the Fediverse. I don't want to just follow nerds talking about the same things and going, hey, I like this app. Yeah, I like this app. Me too. Hey, I use this case. I use that case. Who cares? That just bores the absolute shit out of me. Like, I don't care. It just does. Like, that's not why I use social media. I use social media to find interesting people who are actually talking about interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Apple nerds. I love Apple stuff, and there's an appropriate place and time for talking about it, but I don't want to be on social media just to hear those people talking about what they use for a task list, you know, or a reminder app or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I've heard some cool things online, but not a lot. Not always.
Right. But I mean, I want a variety. Like, I want those people, but I want way more than just those people.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Whereas a lot of people like that about Mastodon. They like that they can have their little bubble and just talk to those other exactly the same type of people with those same type of interests and not talk about anything beyond a certain shared interest. And I get it. That is more mentally, that is a better way of avoiding some of the anguish that seeing the news can bring. I totally understand that. But at the same time, mm-hmm. it's also just boring as hell. Like, I can only handle mm-hmm. so much of that.
Yeah, I follow. I'm with you. Totally with you.
Whereas I'm sure that people can handle a whole lot of this podcast because it's fascinating.
Well, I mean, you and I can, right?
I guess my question to you is, do you think that Elon Musk actually wanted to buy Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay, but he tried to backpedal. He tried to get out of his obligation. What do you think that was?
I think it was all part of his strategy.
Okay.
I think that there are likely plenty of people. So I forget the exact numbers and the percentages and stuff, but when he made the offer, the stock went went way up or down? And I assure you.
Doesn't he have a habit of manipulating stock prices in general?
Yes! Exactly. This is all part of a plan. He's like, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make the stock go up and I'm going to, take options and puts and calls and whatever the hell they call it, where you bet that it's going to tank. And I'm sure he made money on that and then bought it for this and that. I guarantee that if anyone was to actually care enough to investigate, that they would show that, oh yeah, look at that. He completely, utterly manipulated the stock price, and in some way or another, he's making bank on it.
Yeah, that could be. Well, now that we've talked about the jam known as Twitter, did you just hang up on me? Hello?
Well, that was weird. My Mac just went into power saver mode. I'm still recording, I think. And we're reconnecting. Now, I didn't stop recording. I did not
stop
recording.
I didn't
stop
either.
Time.
No, that's perfect.
Great. So we're great.
Yep.
So my Mac just went to power saving mode for no apparent reason. It is still plugged in. Has been the whole time.
There's only one thing to say about that.
Why does it say paper jam when there is no paper jam?
Why did it go to power saving mode when there is no need for power saving mode? That's like, El Guapo, would you say I have a plethora?
Yeah.
Yes, Miguel.
I think somebody's having a case of the Mondays.
Oh, my goodness. Except it's freaking Wednesday, but mm-hmm. yeah. Oh, man.
All right, let's cheer ourselves up and let's cheer up your MacBook Air by talking about... This is something I didn't know about. You brought up this topic, this Halloween-related topic, very timely. Talk to me about this. Explain why this is relevant.
Okay, now I don't know much about it. I just heard about this concept on the Make Me Smart podcast, which is like a companion to...
Make Me Stupid?
Marketplace.
Oh, okay.
Make Me Stupid, yes, exactly. It's called Japan's Mundane Halloween. And apparently this is a trend in Japan where people dress up as mundane Halloween costumes. So they're not, like kaiju or oni demons or Power Rangers or anything. And it's pretty funny. So, I was wondering if this was a thing back when you lived there or not.
No.
But someone put in, two people, for instance, two women. They're dressed identically. And so their costume is called two people who wore the exact same outfit, and now it's super awkward. there's another one is, person who wants to use every bit of toothpaste in the tube. And he's just like squeezing a near empty toothpaste tube.
He's just wearing normal street clothes.
Yeah, yeah.
Holding a thing of toothpaste. This is awesome.
There's a guy carrying a bag full of trash and it's a foreign tourist who can't find any public garbage cans in Japan.
That's perfect. I was going to say that guy's a gaijin, so that's perfect.
Yeah, there you go. Where do I throw my trash? So I heard about these and I think it's just kind of funny. Person whose skeleton is being estimated by machine learning. Is this woman who has just tape measures showing where the major bones would be in the system? It's just kind of funny.
That's awesome.
So yeah, mundane Halloween. Oh, person who accidentally shook their carbonated beverage before opening it. And this guy has just a bunch of foam plastered to his face with a Coca-Cola bottle coming out of a Coke bottle. So yeah, I thought these were pretty cute, So mundane Halloween costumes. I mean, I used to do stuff like that when I wouldn't dress up for Halloween. I would say I'm an average Joe walking down the street. That's me today.
Oh my God, this one's brilliant. So there's this shoyu, and they had this same type of shoyu, this Kikkoman shoyu, in that we used to use when we were there. They had the same thing. And it's brilliant because this guy took a puffy down jacket that has, of course, the sections. The bottle has, you know, horizontal sections as well. And it looks like, because of the color of the shoyu, it looks like this puffy jacket. So basically this person wrapped a puffy jacket around themselves, put a red bottle cap on their head, a big giant thing that looks like a red bottle cap, and then put a big Kikkoman shoyu label on himself and or herself. I don't know which. And
yep. This person is now a bottle of soy sauce.
That's right. That is awesome.
Yep. It's terribly mundane.
Yeah. So. That's good. I like that. This is a cool trend.
I thought you would. I thought you would.
So yeah, and now go. I see the guy with the Coke all over his face. That's awesome.
Yes.
That guy has to walk around holding that bottle in the exact same location, though.
Well, that's, I mean, he's a method actor, man. You know? So.
And here's a guy that just looks like a register clerk. That's awesome. Yeah, no, they didn't. I don't remember anyone ever talking about Halloween at all when we lived there, but you got to remember that was like 40,000 years ago.
Give or take, you know.
Yeah, give or take.
40K. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. So.
What else do we have?
I wanted to ask you how, in general terms, not specifics, but it sounds like you're getting a lot more busy with work.
I definitely was the last couple of weeks. Uh-huh. Yes, that has tapered off again a little bit. It's quieted down. But the month of October was a record setter for consulting work in the last, say, 5-6 years.
Okay, explain it to me like I'm stupid, which you won't be pretending very much.
Right. So I work...
No, there's something you're being loaned out for. There's something that I didn't understand. Like, it wasn't related to your hospital job, but...
Yeah, no, I'm subcontractor.
Right, but so, I didn't understand. Was that...
Do you not understand the concept of a subcontractor?
I do, but I didn't know what context it was in. Is this paradigm context, or what context is this?
I have to even double check. Well, here's the thing. They're... Functionally, there isn't really a difference because I own 100% of Paradigm. So, you know, it can be any, it like, doesn't really matter if it's a Paradigm engagement or a Peter engagement, as far as, like, it all flows down to me eventually.
Right. But what I mean is, this had nothing ever to do with the hospital whatsoever.
Correct.
It
yeah,
was
no,
a,
no, it had nothing to do with my hospital.
This engagement. Was a, Peter Nicolaitis helps this one company, and now this one company that Peter helps wanted to subcontract him out to someone else.
It's actually the opposite. So this company that I've been working with has been subcontracting me out as a virtual CISO. And now they have looped me in to start doing work for them internally as well.
Oh.
Right. So this is a like $1 billion a year managed services provider.
See, that's the part I didn't understand, because the fact that you're like an independent contractor, but they're contracting you out to other people, that sounds like a bizarre arrangement to me, and I didn't know how that came to be.
That's called a subcontractor arrangement. It's very common. Very, very common.
So do you have any say whatsoever in who they contract you out to, or you just say...
Oh, absolutely. I can say no. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. No, so a friend of mine has been acting as their CISO for some time.
Uh-huh.
And so he brought me in as his backup. And I was like, great, no problem. I can do that.
You can back up?
Yeah. So for a specific engagement. And then after some time, he's like, do you want to take over vulnerability management for the parent company? And I was like, sure. So, you know, so that's what I'm doing now too. So, yeah. Yeah. So it's fun times, fun stuff.
Okay, so, now I'm with you.
Doing a lot of the same stuff that I do all the time, but now just for, you know, different company and more of it. Plus, another one of my engagements is in the middle of SOC 2 audit compliance season. So they're going through their service organizational compliance audit, which, you know, they do every year to maintain this, so that when people say, we want to use you, but show us your SOC 2 report, and they can say, here we are. So I'm helping them with all of their stuff as well. And those two things just happen, boom, at the same time. So plus, you know, in addition to all the other stuff that I've been doing, you know, all the other, you know, work that I do every day for both, you know, for the hospital, other Paradigm engagements, teaching yoga, etc. So the only good part was that it all happened after my ultra marathon, not at like the peak of training for that, running, you know, 40 hours a week.
So what's your arrangement with them in terms of, you have a normal job that is your primary job. I say your primary job. You are employed by a specific person, not contracted, but you are employed by a specific company.
So everything I do, I treat as an engagement with a specific amount of required or expected time.
Of course, but so, I guarantee you that your employer doesn't see it the same way. So what I'm asking is, the companies that you contract out to, either as Peter or Paradigm or Paradigm Peter or Peter Paradigm, whatever you want to say, what's their understanding of your availability and what's their expectation?
I would like you to stop recording now.
Okay, that's what I thought. All right.
It is, so it doesn't matter what I do for any sort of engagements. Everything where it is required has been publicly disclosed, and there are no contractual conflicts anywhere in what I do. That said, there's just things I just don't like to talk about, because people have, when people don't understand something, then they will automatically go to the worst possible explanation and they will panic for no reason.
Yeah. So, understood. Totally. I guess what I was asking you is what you just answered, which is what were your disclosures and that kind of thing.
Yeah. No, everything's been fully disclosed. So the thing is, though, is like if I contract with someone and they want me for, say, 10 hours a week, they're not going to get 10 hours a week from me unless I tell them they're going to get 10 hours a week. And I'm not going to tell them that they're going to get 10 hours a week unless I can give them 10 hours a week.
Right.
So it doesn't matter. Now, I know some people are old school and they're hung up on, well, are you a W-2 or a 1099? Well, we want this because we have more control over you. Well, you really don't, you know, like unless I'm, because none of my, and like I've had a number of W-2 jobs over the years. I've never had an employment contract where I like wasn't allowed to leave, right? So this myth that, you know, it's like we're not serfs, you know, tied to the land. So.
No, and you're accepting these positions. Like you have the option of saying, hey, this isn't going to work because your terms don't match.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. I understand that.
Yep.
I just wondered, like, sometimes you obviously can control what 10 hours you give them. There's going to be other times where they have meetings at specific times and they want to control those 10 hours.
Yep. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. If someone says, you know, like, we need you for a morning stand-up meeting every morning at 8 a.m., I'll be like, okay. And if someone else comes and says they want that, I'll be like, well, I'm busy. Or I'll say, which time zone is this?
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah. How can I trick you?
Yep.
Okay. That's cool. Okay. It just, my confusion was that I didn't know about some of these contract jobs that you were doing. And so when you were talking about being subcontracted out, I was like, oh, your primary job is subcontracting out? That's really strange.
Well, you see, that's the new bit. That part is new because I have not done, I mean, I've done it in the past, but I don't often, I often act as a contractor. I have not often acted as a subcontractor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I've done it, you know, a handful of times. So that's different, you know. Now that it's, I can say it's not the norm, right?
Yeah.
So, but that said, it doesn't matter. Like, and I don't tell anybody in any of these jobs, like, oh, I'm not really a contractor here, you know, or blah blah. You know, it doesn't matter. I'm providing service, and in one of the engagements I'm working on, there's a lot of there's some consternation. Let's just put it that way. But the account rep, every time we meet with him, tells us he goes out of his way to say that the VCSO work that I'm doing and my counterpart is great. Don't stop. Everything else, they're like, well, we have concerns about this, but you guys, you VCSOs, just keep doing it. That's great. I'm like, okay, great.
So, yeah. I like to hear that.
Yeah, me too. So. What else? What other questions do you have for me about my work life?
I don't. I just didn't understand that. And for some reason, things got lost in translation when we were texting each other about it.
That happens with pithy little text messages.
It always happens with pithy little text messages.
It always happens.
Yeah.
In fact, it's guaranteed to happen.
Yeah. People can send you one word and it can mean something totally different.
What? Damn you.
So tell me, how's your beer? Has your beer had any effect on you? It's pretty low alcohol.
It's low alcohol. I'm feeling pretty good, and I'm not feeling drunk or not even like tipsy or anything. So I think I'm okay.
Okay, so last time, let's see. I think there's been a couple times where we've mentioned the fact that you now have a MacBook Air as your primary personal computer. explain to me what your work life is like. Like, I imagine, I'm sure there's times where you have to integrate with different Windows domains and Windows systems. What computer are you using when you're doing work for your primary employer? What computer are you using when you're doing your contract work? How is that working out for you? What are you, first of all, are you using your Mac for everything? And if so, how? And, or are you using a Windows laptop for some things?
Little bit of each. I do a little of everything. And I might do a lot of work through Citrix for mm-hmm. a customer, in which case I do it all on my Mac.
Yeah.
There might, if I have to go on site and I have to use, customer issued hardware, then I'll use theirs, you know?
Sure. So,
yeah. No, I've got various things like work issued laptop here, customer issued phone there, my own equipment that I bring there, et cetera, et cetera.
Can I ask you your personal opinion of Citrix? Because I've only used... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. That pretty much jives with most people. I've only used Citrix in a... When Citrix... I don't remember what they have now, but they used to have like a personal option and like for VPN use and stuff like that, I think.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken. There was a personal product that you could use where it wasn't part of a corporation thing, but...
Really?
I've only used them in that context. I've never used them in a corporate context. At my job, we use all Microsoft stuff. It's all Teams mm-hmm. based, and it's all Windows, Teams for Windows, pretty much. I guess there are people at my corporation that use Macs, but they're very few and far between, and they're definitely not doing the job I'm doing, which relies on a lot of different Windows-specific data analysis software and stuff like that.
Yeah. Doing stuff via remote control, it's... I won't say never, but it's I don't think it's going to be as good as doing everything natively for some time. That said, it's generally good enough.
Oh, yeah, you can use there's more stuff in the cloud now, right? You use Windows in the cloud?
Oh yeah. I have some Amazon personal desktops in the cloud that I use from time to time.
What does that mean?
And it's Windows desktops in the cloud.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What does Amazon have to do with it? Why is Bezos sticking his finger in there?
Money.
Oh, yeah. So he rents out Windows instances.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just like it's AWS. It's an AWS service. So there's those, Azure has the, Microsoft, instances in the cloud, et cetera, et cetera. So
yeah.
There's lots of options for using someone else's infrastructure. And that's what I'm going to do, like the next time, I'm trying to decide if I want to do that or if I want to... plunk down money for Parallels and run it locally on my machine. I really don't. I don't want to do either. But the nice thing is with, one of those, I can just fire it up when I need it, which is not all that often, and then shut it down when I don't.
For a lot of stuff, it would probably be okay. It's just going to take up a lot of hard drive space for something that you might use 25% of the time or something like that.
Exactly. So right now I have an old 2016 Intel Core i7 HP laptop, and that's my Windows box. And it's also my virtual box host for an Ubuntu workstation when I need that for something. And that's fine because I just don't need to do a lot of Windows stuff. The most of the stuff I need to do for Windows is with clients. And again, that's in their Citrix infrastructure. So I don't need my own to do that.
So what kind of stuff are you doing in the Citrix infrastructure in general terms, obviously?
Email.
Oh, okay. Well, so you're consulting people on what to do and other people are doing the technical implementations. Is that accurate?
It depends. For some, for other stuff, I'm doing, like firewall administration, or I'm doing, policy reviews, or... controls, risk assessments, assessments against security frameworks like the NIST or NIST cybersecurity framework or the CIS controls.
Okay, but if you're doing, let's say you're doing firewall maintenance, is that something that you can do? Do you have to be in a Windows environment to do that?
So for those, I can either do it natively via VPN from my Mac or I do it by a VDI infrastructure from the customer.
Okay. Interesting. Oh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. We'll just make noises for the rest of the day.
But in general, my starting point is my Mac. So if there's a VDI, I usually go there. and start that way, and then move on from, you know, from there to, you know, if I have to have, you have to have a VPN, you have to, you know, have to come on site and bring this, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, fine, I'll do that. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
Very interesting. Okay, let's end. Let's do something that I know that we had this discussion about. Let's not be like blurring the lines. However,
I'm going to push the big red button.
No. I just want to very briefly, you and I haven't recommended anything good to each other recently. We've done this in the past where we've recommended something we're watching, something we're listening to, something we're using. Or earlier in the podcast, we did talk about Rectangle Pro, so I guess that could qualify.
I was going to say, you scooped me on that.
Do you have anything else going on that you find of interest?
You're going to flame me for this anyway. No, it doesn't really matter.
No, I won't. I promise, unless I want to. Oh, no, Sonos. No. I have an open mind about this, okay? Because it's not that I believe... Okay, look, I'm not a Marco hater. There are a lot of Marco haters, okay? I'm not one of them, but sometimes he's a bit naive about stuff that he hasn't gotten into before. Like the whole... electric bicycle thing, like the whole driving on sand thing. It's like when he discovers it, there's this whole new amazing world that no one possibly could have known about except that everyone did. Uh-huh. Except for him.
Yeah, it's called ignorance. Ignorance is bliss, and he seems like a very happy guy.
Right, and he's not a jerk about it. It's not like he's being a jerk. It's just there's a lot of things that he doesn't know. Mm-hmm. And he gets really surprised and amazed when he finds out about them, which is, you know, and just...
Wait, as you opposed, can drive on sand?
Right, as opposed to just, like, when something new comes up, you know, you and I are like, okay, I'm sure a lot of people know about this. This is just something I didn't know about. You know, it's... Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't explain it.
I get that. But at the same time, I also, you know, I kind of like his childlike innocence.
Yes, there is something to be said for that.
It's kind of cute. And we're both huge fans of his software, right? I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Pay for and use Overcast probably hours a day. It's probably the most frequently used app on my iPhone.
Absolutely. And I like listening to, what's the name of his podcast? See, my beer is kicking in. He has a podcast with _ David Smith. About the act of developing Overcast and programming in general. And I like his thought processes. I like listening to people who know what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
and how they approach that. It doesn't matter what the topic mm-hmm. is. I like to hear how people structure their thought processes around the things that they do and the mm-hmm. things that they know how to do well and what they've been successful in. So anyway... I have a lot of respect for the guy. So, no, I have an open mind about this because in the past I've told you that Sonos sounds like a nightmare. It sounds like a train wreck. I can't believe it, blah, blah, blah. But I am totally open to the idea that Sonos has improved and or that some of my stuff might have been misconceptions based on how AirPlay interacted with Sonos, et cetera, et cetera. So you're not... I'm actually not going to blast you at all about the Sonos thing. I'm actually on board with you on this one.
Yeah, so pretty much all of the problems that I have had with Sonos have been around their Amazon personal assistant integration or their AirPlay support.
Right.
And I'm not 100% certain that 100% of the AirPlay stuff is their fault.
Sure.
It's probably a lot of their fault, right? But when I just use their stuff natively, it really is nice. It's really good. And the other thing to keep in mind, I just realized just recently, most of my Sonos hardware is 10 years old.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? How many... I understand, you know, speakers. Yes, I have 10-year-old speakers. But each one of these is a little Linux-powered network computer. How many 10-year-old computers do you have lying around, right, that you're still using?
But see, that's a bit of a problem.
Yeah, I get it. I'm not defending them, but I am saying, okay, fine. So I did decide to take advantage of their 100-day guarantee and upgrade some of my Sonos infrastructure. And I'm going to be curious to see how it responds when I am using just newer generation stuff versus the old stuff.
Yeah. Yes. I have a suspicion that a lot of your problems are going to go away.
Probably would. So, and what I did is I sort of decided to go all in on this too, because recently I decided not to remodel my kitchen, you know, to the tune of $80,000 to $100,000.
Wow.
So I'm not doing that.
So you spent all that money, you spent 80 grand on Sonos.
Exactly. No, what I did decide to do is spend a fraction of that on Sonos gear. And so I am, I bought a couple of new Sonos, you know, they're little Sonos One speakers with the Sonos assistant built in. So I don't have to use the A word. And it is nice. The one thing that's really cool is I can say, hey, Sonos, group living room with third floor.
Yeah.
I can just verbally do it without having to open up the app, and the music just follows me around the house, which is great. But what I also did is I followed the example of a close friend of mine up in Vermont, and I am putting speakers in my ceiling. And I bought a Sonos amp to drive those.
All right, check this out.
Terminal Gravity. I know that.
I am going to have a Terminal Gravity Brewing Festive Ale, and it's a strong winter ale. Now, I will say that this is another one that turned out to be pretty good, but I probably won't buy again.
Pretty good, but not good enough.
Not good enough, right. And here's the problem. Here, therein lies the problem with our thumbs up, thumbs down situation, because if I'm not going to buy it again, is that a thumbs down? Or the fact that it doesn't really bug me that much, but it's not one of my favorites, is that a thumbs up?
I don't know. But before we move on, I will say it's the Sonos amp and the Sonos One. I also bought some Niles speakers, and I bought them from Crutchfield.
Okay.
I have been a Crutchfield customer on and off for decades.
They have amazing car installation kits, by the way.
Amazing car installation kits, amazing customer service.
Yes.
And the guy helped me online. I was like, look, I'm looking for, you know, these speakers. I told him what I'm looking for. I said, you know, I know Sonos makes the speakers that you can put in the in the ceiling. And he's like, yeah, but anything Sonos, you're going to be paying a premium for that. And I was like, right. So what's good? You know, Klipsch, Polk Audio. He's like, yeah, well, they're all pretty expensive. I'm like, I know, but I've heard the names. I don't know what else. And he's like, these Niles speakers are just as good. And look at the price. And look, they're on sale. They're like half off. So I literally got twice as many appraisers.
How do they interact with that Sonos infrastructure?
Cable. The Sonos amp just powers your speakers.
Okay.
So the Sonos amp is just another Sonos equipment without any speakers.
And if you want to, you can tell it, hey, don't output to these dum-dums. But
yeah, you get to choose. You know, this becomes, it just becomes, the amp becomes another room. And so pretty soon my living room / dining room will have its own set of speakers.
Nice.
In the ceiling, you know, so the whole first floor will have in-ceiling speakers. I'm pretty stoked about that.
Is this for future episodes of Friends with Brews where you plan on drinking so much that you're just laying on the floor staring up at the ceiling? Is that what this is all about?
That's pretty funny too, because I had someone suggest that we host a stuffed brioche French toast date where after we eat them, we spread a blanket out on the floor and just stare at the ceiling for a while. So,
oh my God.
There you go. I think that's a great idea.
All right. Well, I will just wrap it up real quick because we've been going for a while and you probably have better things to do with your life, but the listeners don't for sure. So I want to talk about something called The Peripheral. William Gibson wrote a book called The Peripheral many years ago, but I don't know how long ago, and I'm not going to look it up right now. Anyway, Amazon Prime now has made that into a TV series, and there's only been 3 episodes so far, and the 4th episode comes out on Friday.
Okay.
A lot of times when they take good books and make them into TV series, they don't turn out to be that good. They turn out to be disappointing. Mm. This is not one of those. So far, it is very good. Okay. I haven't read the book in a while, so I don't remember if it's exactly the same. And it's just good. I really like it. So if you have Amazon Prime and you're bored, give The Peripheral a try. Just give it a try. Watch a couple episodes and see what you think about it. But I really like it. I don't know how much you're into what I would call sci-fi. Well, you know, have you ever read William Gibson?
I have not.
Okay. So this book was written in, When was it written? 2015.
Yeah.
I believe there's a sequel that I own but haven't read yet. But yeah, it's so far it's a very good TV series. I'm really impressed with it and I can't wait to see where it goes next. So if you're bored and you like William Gibson-ish type of sci-fi or cyberpunk, if you want to call it that, give it a shot. It's good.
There you go. Good. Well, on that note, I think we should
type cookie.
There's a new virus in the database.
What's happening?
It's replicating, eating up memory. What do I do?
Type cookie, you idiot.
Type cookie, you idiot.
That never gets old, Peter.
Can I hang up now?
You can hang up. Oh, my God.
I'm going to hang up now.
So can the listener.